I'm Eric Nakamura. We're here at Giant Robot 2 doing a podcast, and this is Mae Melanson.
Hi.
That was a pretty good hi. Mae Melanson was doing her Instagramming and social networking.
I'm attempting to get more into it.
So what have you been up to these days?
Oh, wow. What have I been up to these days? That's one of those kind of questions when someone asks you, like, what did you do today? And your brain goes blank. A lot of things. Reading, sleeping, hanging out.
No, wait, I think you're kind of busy, actually, right?
No.
Usually the word busy is...
Yeah, I'm doing a few things. I'm getting into producing right now, which has been really fun. I'm doing this film with this director, Ellen Houlihan, and... it's my first time producing, and now I see how difficult it can be. And I have empathy for anyone I've given a hard time to that's produced me in the past.
How come producing, of all things, like instead of directing or... I mean, I know you're already doing acting, but
yeah,
why producing?
I think it works a different side of your brain. I think as an actor, it's really fun, but you can kind of go into... a land in your head of just like where nothing's grounded, and producing kind of uses a part of my brain that I don't get to use as much, and it's more challenging to learn to work with people and learn how to solve problems. It's just like all a big problem solving thing, and it's fun. It's yeah.
Is that kind of a step in for future things? Like, is that something you might want to keep doing as you keep going, or is acting still kind of the primary thing you want to do?
I mean, I love acting so much. It's definitely something I'm thinking about all the time. Wow, we jumped right into this, didn't we?
Yeah.
No, acting's something I will always do, but I've been writing a lot of things, and it's funny, because whenever you're actually... working on projects that are personal projects, it's really hard to talk about them because people are always like, what are you up to? And like, I wrote 25 pages this week, and everyone's like, yay, but not really, because that's not really anything solid that they can see. So it's been a time of like a lot of creating lots of projects and waiting for them all to come into fruition.
Kind of behind the scenes stuff then.
Exactly.
Yeah, I got you.
I like being behind the scenes. That's why I'm an actor.
All right. So tell me about the 100-plus commercials you've been in.
Oh, people, shoot.
That's kind of something that I think is remarkable. Kind of amazing, but I think a lot of people wouldn't even know that you've done that many.
Yeah, I mean, if you think over 12 years or 13 years of doing them, you know, not all of them run. I've been really lucky. I think Commercial America and, like, the consumers and the agencies and everything, I think that I've been lucky that they like my look or something. I don't know.
What's the best one?
That I've ever done?
Yeah. Like one that you're just like...
that stands out to me?
Yeah.
You know, there's been quite a few that have been... I've worked with some really... The good thing about commercials and why I feel lucky to do them is that you work with really creative people that are... also working in film and television. Like, I've done a commercial with, like, Roman Coppola.
What commercial was that?
It was for Bing.
Oh, okay.
And then, let me see.
That's a Microsoft company, right?
Right.
I think Microsoft owns Bing, I think.
I guess I should be paying attention for who hires me. There's been... all of them are fun. I don't think I've ever had a bad experience working on commercials. But if you can think of... I think I've done pretty much every car company... I've done everything. It's, you know, you don't really... Anyway.
Yeah. What about beer companies? Have you done a beer commercial?
I have. I did a beer commercial with Lance Armstrong, and you barely see me in it.
So Lance Armstrong's in a beer commercial?
He is. He's in a commercial for Michelob Light. Miller Lite. Oh my gosh, how
you're
can
so
I forget
busted.
This?
Oh my
I'm
gosh.
So busted.
All right, way to go, spokesperson.
No,
spokesperson.
This is not so good. That was a couple years ago. It kind of like, I'm like, all right, I did do that.
What's the first commercial
that I ever did?
Yeah.
Was
like, how'd you get started with it?
It was a McDonald's commercial. Oops.
Wow. So you started, that's starting pretty much at the top of a, you know, that's a big commercial to be in, right?
I don't know. I was really nervous. And it was the first thing I'd been in that was like a live cam, like moving camera. And I kept pausing as I was walking. Have I told you this story?
No.
And the director finally
was that this like pop locking type of thing? Sounds like you're like breakdancing or something.
The director was like, "You can just, this is not freeze frame. You can just walk through the shot," because I was used to just shooting and like pausing and holding a pose.
Oh, then they'd move the camera or something?
Well, I wasn't used to like film. I was used to just
shot. Oh, that's right. Like, modeling. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's
so I was like, "Oh, I got this." And I'd just like pause my walks instead of just walking all the way
that
through.
Sounds ridiculous.
I know. I was such a, yeah, it was ridiculous. I've learned a lot since then.
Oh, well, I wish there was video of that.
I'm sure it's on the cutting floor somewhere. They probably threw it away at this point. And then the other one that I did right after that was a Moto commercial, which I think you said you saw.
Oh, that's a famous commercial.
It is. It was fun.
Everybody, the Hello Moto commercial. Can you do that? Can you do it?
Hello Moto. I don't know.
Okay, how many of you remember that? Because that's like, you know what? That's a commercial that I tried to find and I couldn't find it online.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I looked for it once and I couldn't find it. But yeah, you're the Hello Moto girl.
I am.
And what were you wearing? It looked like a dress, right?
I was supposed to get married. And
yeah, it was a wedding dress, right?
Yeah.
And you were sitting on a bed, maybe.
I was ditched at the altar.
That's what it was. And you were like kind of sad.
Yes.
Hello Moto, right?
I'm crying.
Yeah, I see.
And I remember I was like, I'm just actually looking up right now because I worked on with a really great director on that.
That was like
Anthony Hoffman directed that, and he was really cool. He's a film director also.
Yeah, that was a really great thing because actually there's a lot of people who remember that, I think.
Yeah, this is so funny. We're talking about commercials.
Yeah. Well, there's like these like really special commercials that like certain people can remember, but that's one that I know people talked about a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun because they work so quickly. Like, everything is so organized on commercials. And I think it's really cool to watch the agency speak about the product and just listen in on how they pitch things and what the, whatever it is, the formula it is to what they feel is going to make money or not. That's cool. Kind of wish I was in advertising sometimes.
No, you don't.
No, I don't.
No,
I don't wish
no.
that.
Stay
copywriter.
Away. Yeah, stay away.
Really?
No, you don't want to do any of that.
It sounds so fun, and these guys are all so cool, guys and girls.
99% won't ever even see the light of day. You're going to do all this work, and it won't even get anywhere. And then they're going to change it all. You're going to be like, "I wrote that? No, I didn't." And then,
really?
Then you're going to be like, "I guess I wrote that, but it's not it."
Yeah.
It'll all get changed.
But they're so.
That's what I. That's what I
awesome.
Hear from a lot of copywriters.
Really?
Yeah. It's not exactly. Yeah, and most of it does. It's just cutting room floor. So
yeah.
Even the best ideas never make it to fruition, right? Best ideas are getting shot down really early on.
Right. Well, they're probably too like avant-garde or something.
What was that?
What was that? It's the end of the world. We have a Godzilla's on our roof.
That was really weird. Maybe there's, you know, this building too. Sometimes there's taggers and they jump on the roof and then they run to the billboards and tag on the billboard.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So maybe there's a tagger on the roof.
Soft-tail taggers.
Oh, they're here.
I would
They're
love
everywhere.
To see. I've never seen that actually in action.
Oh, I can go outside in the back and you can tag on the back wall.
Yeah. So Nakamura, I had a question for you.
Oh.
What were we just talking about in the coffee place? We were talking about how you like to interview underdogs. Is this part of the interview, me as an underdog?
Maybe you're. Are you an underdog?
I kind of am.
I mean, you have 100 commercials. You're kind of like the established.
Not really. I have to say that doesn't have anything to do with me.
You're taking all the work from everybody else who wants it. I don't think you're the underdog. I mean, maybe in film and all these other new projects, yeah you're definitely an underdog.
Well,
there.
I'm definitely.
Because
I'm always learning.
Even like, you know, like, okay, let's bring it up. Psylocke, X-Men,
oh,
right?
Dear.
This great character that some people say, oh, she should just have her own spinoff movie. And, you know, a lot of people say that. And, you know, that's kind of an underdog thing where you only got, like, what, a couple, 5 minutes maybe or 10 minutes?
Probably less. Probably 30 seconds.
No, a little more than that.
Really?
I don't know. But you got this time in X-Men and you had, you know, you're one of the X-Men characters. But, yeah, that's something that people have said. So that's kind of underdogish.
Yeah, it is. It is an underdogish. But at the same time, when you have only done modeling and commercials and maybe a few bit parts here and there, and then you get this opportunity, it was... For me, I was just having a blast. It was like, wow, I'm on this massive set. There's 300 people on it, and I'm having a great time. It's funny, because I was always listening to everyone on set when they were talking about that role or when they were talking about different roles, and it was always coming from so much enthusiasm, and everyone was so excited. And at the end, when a movie comes out and it's totally different from what everyone wanted, it was interesting. And I know that even in little things I've started directing or producing, it's like you see some great moments or you have these great ideas, and they don't fit in with the story. And yeah.
You just got to learn to cut those out, maybe.
Yeah, or maybe or I just was terrible. Yeah. Just kidding. I'm just kidding. I don't know.
No, that's kind of a cool role to play. Like, you know, you couldn't do any, like, it's one of those things where it's like you didn't have such a big role that it could be a mess, and they're like, ah, yeah, that was horrible.
Right.
You know, it's like one of those things where it's pretty safe. Like, you know?
Right.
It's like introducing this character, you got lines, and then it's like, you know.
Yeah.
They could have took it to the next level.
Right. You know,
but there was no next level for X-Men, I guess.
Exactly.
I mean, it was done, right?
Yeah, the movie was.
Yeah,
was
that's what I mean. But ending. It's like, if they wanted to, they kind of mm-hmm. brought you out as like a chess piece. Like, here, we're showing right. you this chess piece. Here it is. And then, you know, never went.
I wish that there was a TV show that kind of followed the way that comic books are written, where people all of a sudden will disappear and die, and then a couple years later they come back. You know, there's, yeah. you know, when you have that on, if you see a TV show and that happens, I guess they do it too on. They do it, you know where they do it? They do it in soap operas.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where well, all of a sudden someone just dies.
Law and Order does it in weird ways. I mean, you mm-hmm. can't come back as the same person, but like a character will die, and then all of a sudden, like, 2 years later, they're back with a different accent,
right.
and I'm like, you're now playing a good guy, but you were a bad guy who got killed, or when you went to Rikers, right?
Wait, so what's it, they come back as a completely different character?
Yeah, they do, but it's the same actor, and I'm like...
And you notice it because you've been watching
it. Yeah, I watched it over years. I'm like, okay, 5 years later, you're now, like, a good guy.
Funny.
You know what I mean? And I'm like, you don't think people are going to notice that?
Mm-hmm.
But they do.
Yeah.
This is weird. I'm like, oh, I guess that's... Maybe there's just a small pool of actors in New York that are just...
Or
like
else
ready.
They're just really excellent actors.
That
they're
too.
Character actors that can
too.
Just play anything. God,
yeah.
what...
Yeah.
That would be the ideal.
So when's the last time you did modeling?
When was the last time I did modeling? I actually just... shot something modeling.
Oh, you're still modeling? Oh, okay.
No.
I was hoping you were going to say something like, oh, I haven't done that since I
haven't
I was
done
18.
That. I'm like, too good for that. No, that's definitely not the case. Every now and then someone will come to me and be like, hey, do you want to do this? And I'll be like, sure. You know, I'm the spokesperson for this clothing line, this sports clothing line called Solo Sport. And they're really cool. S-O-L-O-W. They have like a bunch of like really great yoga workout gear and stuff for women, because sometimes that stuff can look really crappy on you. Not that you want to look good when you work out or anything.
Do they make yoga mats?
I don't know if they make yoga mats.
I do yoga. Do you do yoga?
I do yoga. Yeah, I have to.
Because yoga mats are like
the thing.
I don't know. I always see people carrying yoga mats, so I'm always thinking maybe there's a revolutionary way to, like, change this role that you have to carry with you.
Yeah.
That role looks ridiculous. When I see people walking with
it's
that, I'm
true.
Like, oh,
it's a little
God.
Clumsy.
Yeah, and sometimes they're yellow or something, right. and I'm like, great, person walking down the street with a yellow roll, you know? It's huge, too, right? So
it's a big thing. Have you ever done yoga?
No, I've never have.
Eric.
I'm not doing yoga. See, there's the tagger.
He's kind of...
Seriously.
Like, he walks like the Hulk.
Well,
that's a great sound effect.
That's really weird. Yeah.
But there's a good place here in Santa Monica for yoga, power yoga.
I've heard of it.
Have you go to this guy named Vetus?
I'm not going to Vetus.
Vetus is great.
No Vetus for me.
You'll feel worked out.
It's okay.
I don't want to.
I don't need to work out with Vetus.
I've actually gotten to the point now where I can do a shoulder stand, which is amazing because it was like the most daunting thing for a long time.
Well, after we're done, you're going to show us the shoulder stand.
Really? I just drank that delicious coffee and ate that.
Is gravity going to cause a problem?
I don't know. I don't know if I'd want to try it. Like, you know.
Okay.
That upside down position. We're not in space.
Wait. So at the yoga place, since you go do yoga, how many times do you hear people fart?
You know what? Not that... Oh my gosh, that's a funny story. There is... I shouldn't even say this, but I'm going to. Okay, at this one yoga place I went to, there was this one corner where this one girl would always be, and she always smelled like Mexican food. But it sucked because it was the best corner because it was like dark and long. A lot of people were over there. And after a while, I was like, I just shouldn't go in that corner because without fail, I feel like this woman eats a lot of Mexican food, and it ruins your yoga experience. You can't be relaxed and be breathing when that's right beside you. But not often.
So it's all gas. you think?
It's all guess. Her?
Yeah. Maybe she worked in a Mexican place.
No, she's not.
She's not Latin at all?
No.
I guess you don't have to be Latin to work at a Mexican place, but I guess maybe just all the gas just comes out as Mexican food for her.
Maybe.
Okay, so...
She eats a lot of onions at home. I don't know.
I have this perception that at every yoga practice, someone's going to be cutting a fart.
Maybe they are silently.
Really? Okay.
You don't want to be behind the fart.
I've seen some YouTube videos where people are ripping farts at yoga.
What are you doing watching farting YouTube videos?
Oh, oops.
No, it's... Okay. It's really... how about this? The farts... They do not outweigh the benefits of yoga.
Okay.
And I'm not a yogi.
All right.
But I also have, like, tons of energy, and if I don't work out, I won't sleep as well. And that segues into this thing that my friend sent me yesterday. It's about sleep, how important sleep is. So you have to sleep, like, 8 hours a day.
That's too much.
Do you sleep 8 hours
a
day?
No, a little less. Six, maybe?
Shoot.
Yeah, I do six.
Yeah.
I don't do 8, 9, or 10 or anything like that.
Right. You don't?
Rare occasions.
I can't do it. No.
Do you play video games?
Not anymore.
What did you used to play?
You know, I'm like a mature woman now, Eric. I try not to do things that are childish. I'm trying to be a woman now. That's a hard transition.
What games do you play on your phone? I know you have games on your phone.
Do I have games on my phone?
Those are video games.
Do I?
Yeah, those are video games.
Really? What do I have? I don't think I have any. I really don't have games on my phone.
Wow.
I'm a big writer. I'm writing so many things right now that it's not... you want to know what the kind of stuff... I have a lot of French because I have a lot of French to touch up my French. I have a lot of those. We're looking through my iPhone right now to see what I have. I'm kind of a nerd if you looked at the stuff. I have a sleep cycle app.
Oh, I have that.
What do you think of it?
It's pretty neat.
Do you put it on your bed?
Yep.
I do. I have a gratitude app. Ooh,
I don't know what that is.
Meditation.
Oh, my God.
My God. That's when you're an actor. Like, things are so stressful, you don't want to hear about that. Yeah.
Okay.
Off that.
Your phone.
My phone, off that. I have an app for acting.
Oh, that's
rehearsal.
Cool. Oh, good.
Yeah.
So you use your phone as a tool.
I don't sound like a very interesting...
No, we're working on it.
Eric's trying to make
it. Well, okay, this is bad. We need to talk... Well, no, the bad is... You said you're doing a lot of writing. You're writing a book.
Yeah.
What happened to the book?
It's still in
Tell process. Us about the book.
Whoa.
See?
That just got heavy.
Well, okay. You're trying to say you're not interesting, so now the book.
Right.
So now we're going to get interesting.
So basically, there's something that's... I have a very unique background because... I'll give the light version of it. I moved around a lot as a kid, and I think I moved 37 times. So I lived in like 37 different places between the age of 0 and 17. And my parents were hippies, basically. So I lived in communes. That's the short version of it. So it's my experience as a kid and living with a lot of people and all that. But a lot of it was in Asia. I was in Japan and Hong Kong and Korea and Taiwan. And, you know, we traveled around a lot.
How many kids were there?
I have 10 brothers and sisters.
Is it all the same mom and dad?
It's a mother and a father of two. My mom, and then I have younger brother. My mom remarried.
Oh, okay.
That's the easier way to put it. My mom.
So I once saw a film about a commune, and nobody knew whose parents were.
Well, you know, that does happen.
Because it was a commune, so that was just like a lot.
Hence my writing. That's a very heavy subject for a podcast, but I'm sure people can handle it with what's on television right now. But yeah, the book is not dead. But what I'm doing now is, and it's one of the things I'm writing, is when I was 17, I moved away from my parents. I've kind of been a wild street urchin on my own for the last, 13, 14, 15 years. But, I was out on my own when I was 17. And it's my experience, like, coming out into the world after living such a different childhood growing up. And it's called The Five. And it's about five of us that all left. So I'm making it into a script.
So there's five that are still with the family then?
No.
You said there's 10 brothers and sisters.
Oh, no. This isn't like my brothers and sisters.
Oh, okay.
This is just what I'm writing about now.
Oh, okay.
But the book is still going.
Where are your brothers and sisters?
They're all over the place.
Are they still like part of a commune?
No. No, everyone's out. Everyone's normal, quote unquote.
What about your parents? Are they
my
part of a commune?
My parents are not part of a commune. my mom and dad. My dad works in Japan. This is my stepdad. And my mom lives in the Midwest with my little brothers and sisters.
Is she a hippie?
She's not a hippie, but I would say that she's very free-spirited, and we have a really great relationship now, and they're kind of... My parents are interesting because they're very supportive. They're very liberal about certain things that are but then other things they're very conservative. They're still very Christian, and you know.
Wait, am I allowed to ask more commune questions?
You want to ask more commune questions? This is the first time I've ever spoken about it publicly, if that's the case. But you could ask me something.
Well, you know, I don't really know what a commune is except for these weird things that I've seen. So I'm wondering, okay. Is this commune like a thing where you all have to like grow your own vegetables and...
Some of them are.
That kind of... Well, I'm talking about the one you were at. Did right. you have to like grow your own vegetables and kind of eat what you plant and... You know, that kind of a thing? Was it super hippie like that? Or were you still going to supermarkets and, you know, were you, like, paying taxes? Were you doing all that kind of stuff? Did you have electricity?
We had electricity. It would be... Okay, it would be in a home and there'd be people... some of the times it was growing your own vegetables and stuff, but a lot of times it would just be a big house in a suburban or urban area. You know, in Japan, it was, like, we had one home in Fukuoka and... in Kashi, and like another time it was in Osaka, and then Kobe. I lived in Kobe. I lived in Kyoto. I've lived all those places, and there'd just be a home, like in what's it called, Ryokan? There would be like
a bed and breakfast dish.
Exactly,
type of thing.
And they turned it into a commune.
Oh.
Yeah.
So what did you have to do though? Did you go to school? Were you homeschooled, or how did that work?
Yeah, I can say that we were quote unquote homeschooled. We were taught to read really early, which was important, which has helped a lot in life when you know how to read.
Yeah, I think it's important. Well, you guys weren't like, you guys were clothed, right? You weren't like naked kids running around. Like,
I mean, I'm sure sometimes we were naked. I'm just kidding. Yeah.
I mean,
that's for the
right?
book.
Because well, you would think like a commune, my picture is you're in the wild somewhere far away from the city.
Right.
And there's a house and it's like a farm and there's like no neighbors.
Right.
And nobody even knows about you guys. Kind of a thing. Is it like that? Or is it just like, here we are, a commune, but nobody knows we're a commune?
That is probably more the way it was when I was raised. Now, you have to understand also, I was born into this, basically. So when you're born into something like this, you don't know what you're comparing it to. So, you know, I'd see kids in the neighborhood. We were also very, we're taught to be very quiet, so no one would complain about the noise, so many people being in the house. So I don't even know if a lot of the neighbors knew there were that many people in the house, like 60 or 70 people. But it's not something I've spoken about a lot because it starts a whole discussion.
But like now?
Like now. Eric does it to me on a podcast. Ta-da!
Is it a bad thing, though?
No, I don't.
It's interesting, right?
Here's the thing. It's not a bad thing now for me because I've come to terms with that everyone... You know, have we hit 7 billion people in the world yet?
I don't know. Probably.
Okay. We're getting there. But of all those people, there's going to be some stories that are not mainstream. And I think that I'm just a person that doesn't have a mainstream upbringing, which, you know, is something that gets complicated when I'm trying to relate to others when it comes to, oh, where'd you go to high school? Or where'd you grow up? It could be the most stressful question for me because, like, which place is more what comes into my mind?
Wow. Which was best? Which place do you remember and you're like, this place was cool? Or were they,
You know, I think when you're a child, you find the joy and you like wherever you are to a certain extent. You find fun wherever you are. You know, like, you're a kid, so...
Yeah.
But I would say when... moved to the States when I was around heading into like 11, 12, I believe, and I remember being very we all cried when they said we're going to the States. We all started bawling. We were in Kokuda in Japan and my mom and dad came in and they're like, guess what, we're moving to America, and we all just started bawling. We were like, no!
That's really funny.
It was terrible, and I was depressed about it for, like, the whole time. It was, like, this looming fear of moving to America because it seemed like such a... we didn't know very many Americans. I mean, we knew a few Americans would be in the communes, but there was also a lot from other countries like Australia and England.
Wait, is that because it was America scary?
Kind of. We were always told, you know, and also it's funny, like a lot of the kids that came from the States were really aggressive and outspoken and, you know, all those things that you're not over there. You're much more, you know, subdued and polite. And then we moved here and it was just like, it was a big culture shock. And the streets were really wide and the cars were huge and people were sarcastic and we didn't understand sarcasm at all. Like someone would say, "Oh, get out of here," and you get up and walk out of the room, you know? It was a culture shock, but yeah.
And so were you guys running away from something or running to something? I mean, 37 times in 17 years is a lot of moving.
Yeah,
so, I mean, that's like a few times a year.
Yeah, it was a few times a year. Yeah. The most I ever stayed in one place when I was a kid, and I remember we were all talking about it was a year, and it was in Kyoto. And
like, why moving around? Like, why being... Basically, you're nomadic, you know? And that's kind of an odd... I mean, there's people who live in Mongolia. They're nomadic.
Right.
You're kind of like an urban nomadic person.
Exactly. Right?
That's kind of an odd...
Yeah.
That's really odd. But, like, yeah, why? Tax evasion?
No, I don't think it was...
Yeah,
you would think, but no.
It just sounds like
I don't think we had enough money for there to be a tax evasion issue.
Well, 10 kids, I think.
Yeah, it's like, I don't
a lot of money going to, like, food and clothing.
We lived very frugally. Yeah. It was something that was a good base.
But, yeah, why moving around?
It was part of the commune thing. You'd move in between these communes. Like, it wasn't just us. It wasn't just, like, one commune. It wasn't like we were running away. It was like... Oh, would you guys like to move here? And some of the times, I wasn't even with my parents. I'd be in a different commune, and they'd be somewhere else, you know? So, that's for the book.
Well, the book's going to be, like, 800 pages, right?
And
so,
right now,
this is like
300.
This is just like
a little...
Yeah, this is like a sample.
This
is just like the intro, you know?
Yeah.
You have to read the book.
we're
not even talking about what happened
when the TV show.
When you were 16, I know some weird shit happened, so we're not going to talk about that, huh?
I've had some... I've lived a life. But hasn't everyone, you know?
No, but when you're 17, something really must have happened.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, so many things.
So we're not going to even talk about that.
Oh, did you go back and read this stuff? No, you didn't.
We're gonna like, talk...
Another time. No.
Okay, I don't think so. Yeah, I think so.
But, you know, when I hear people's lives that are like... that have lived in one town, they're like, "Oh, I lived in one town and I never moved." Like, how'd you basically did that, right?
I didn't move very much. No, we moved two times.
Right.
Yeah, barely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that for me, I'm like, that's so interesting. Or if someone says,
moving's a hassle, though.
Oh, it's a hassle. It sucks. And every time we'd move, I'd cry too, because you get to miss the people you lived with.
Sure.
You live with them for 3 months.
It's
and you get
traumatic.
A bond. It is.
You know, it is traumatic, right? Mm-hmm. You make friends in the neighborhood, whatever it is, and all of a sudden, bye, never seen you again.
Right.
We're going to write. Yeah, right. You know,
yeah.
It goes away, right?
Yeah. And I think it also creates a personality type that it where you, in my life, if something happens, it's good and bad. You know, I'm always like, oh, it's okay. You know, guys have broken up with me and, like, I need space.
Who would break up with you, first off? Who are these people?
Obviously. Look at my background. Someone's going to pick something. No, but they'll be like, I need a couple weeks. And I'm like, okay, bye. And they're like, you're not upset? No. Go. Let's take your space.
Oh, you hurt many a man, I'm sure.
No.
Those poor guys. Dudes that are... Yeah. Oh.
No, but if you give someone...
Guys probably like whimpering.
Oh. But then they come back.
Yeah, and they come back.
They come back because you learn in life. I think it's a good lesson is that, you know, if something's supposed to be, it always comes back around. And that loss is part of life. And you just learn it on high speed when you're always moving. And I think also becoming an actor, I mean, it's... And I was actually thinking this in the beginning of our conversation, was acting has been such a... healing, calming thing for me, even though for most people it wouldn't be. It would be the opposite, that it would be really traumatic to be an actor. But for me, it's like all these things, issues I had, and because I lived with so many people at different points in my life, I saw so many different personalities, and to not get in trouble, it was a survival mechanism to, like, shift into this person, like, really be able to relate to people on their level, whether it was adults, whether it was children. And sometimes you're living with people that are not... They're scary and difficult to get along with, and you learn to, like, see into how to protect yourself the best way. And for acting, I think that that's something that's Mamie and for writing. So I'm really intrigued with the human condition because I've seen a lot of stuff, you know, more on hyperspeed. Maybe we all experience it as life goes on, but when you actually live with 60 or 70 people, you know, you're experiencing that much energy, human energy coming in, you know.
You mean the commune was 60 or 70 people?
Sometimes more, sometimes like 120. In different places, you know?
I'm totally ignorant. I kept thinking, well, mom and dad and 10 kids, that's 12 people in a commune.
No.
Oh, no, there's other people.
We didn't always have 12 kids. Sometimes it was only five when we were younger, you know. Okay. The kids are young.
So there are, like, all these other strangers from all over the place.
Right.
Oh, wow.
But
it's like summer camp every day.
It was. My mom and dad, though, are like, now we're all really close and... Mm-hmm. I keep in touch with all the 10 of my brothers and sisters. Like, six in a day, sometimes we'll get on phone calls and there'll be a problem in the family and we'll all be talking and emailing and everything. So that's really nice, you know. But, yeah. Any other questions about the part of my life that I don't talk about?
Well, it's not a bad thing, is it? Or is it a bad thing?
I mean, if someone has a problem with it, what am I going to do about it? Nothing.
But did you have a problem with it?
Did I have a problem with it?
It's enough to write a book about it, right?
Yeah. I think that, well, the hardest part, I think, of that is when we're also very sheltered, as in we didn't watch television. We only watched old films. Like, if you see, like, the top 100 greatest films of all times, I think I've probably seen, like, 80 of them because they were, quote-unquote, more morally sound than anything in the 80s or the 90s. We were only allowed to watch certain things that had good lessons, and we memorized a lot of scripture, and, you know, I mean, I'm sure other people could relate. I don't know if it's not Amish because this had a whole other wild side to it, the way we were raised. But the hardest part for me was coming out of that was not knowing anything about pop culture. I was completely lost, you know. I didn't know that Kurt Cobain. The weirdest thing is when I was 17, I remember I was sitting somewhere and someone asked me, there was some Nirvana song on. I was 17. And he had died in 94, and what was this? This was like 97, I think. And I was like, oh, he should make more songs. And I was like, he's dead. And I didn't know that. I didn't even know, you know, I was lost. Music, the 80s, still, like, stuff will come on and I'll get nervous because I don't know what it is. And I've caught up a lot, you know, and now I love music. And
so you never saw Different Strokes?
No, I don't even know what that is.
Silver Spoons, you never saw that? How about The Love Boat? That's a little older, though.
The Love Boat, I think we saw episodes of that.
How about Dallas?
Nope.
Fantasy Island?
No.
You don't know Fantasy
Island?
What is
Fantasy Island?
Oh, my gosh. A little island where people can go to and then their dreams can come true or not. And had Mr. Rourke, Ricardo Montalban, and Harvey Villachez, who's a little midget.
No.
Oh, small person, sorry.
Oh, yeah,
but
small person,
kind of,
little
he was,
person.
He was kind of famous. No, you never saw that.
No, I didn't.
Starsky and Hutch, you ever see that?
The original, no, I have not seen that, no.
Charlie's Angels, that's getting a little older.
I think I've seen, you know, obviously that stuff is playing on TV somewhere, but I miss that.
Wow, you missed all of that stuff.
I missed a lot of things. Yeah. I'll tell you what I have seen are things like the Ten Commandments.
Okay.
A lot of movies from the 40s. Just a lot of older films.
Wow.
Yeah, that's...
So you missed the entire 80s.
I did miss the 80s. I saw Pretty in Pink recently.
Did you like it?
It was cute.
So that kind of period of... There's like a look and style and a feel to those movies, right? All the 80s.
Yeah.
Do you kind of get that, or did you not grow up with that?
No.
Because you know, there's those, like, haircuts and, like, kind of, you know, the look of everybody has a distinct feeling.
There was a specific look. I think that, they were kind of doing that a little bit in Japan.
Uh-huh. But you were kind of in the boonies at some points of this, so
right.
I'm not sure if that stuff caught up or not, or was it even more pronounced?
We weren't allowed to, like, I really never watched television. And I remember, this is an interesting fact, I knew who Michael Jackson was because I remember he came to Japan and brought his monkey Bubbles into Parliament. And it was a big deal because it was all over the newspapers. And because of, you know, the religious factor and the fact that he did this stuff that was like quote-unquote devil worship, I didn't know any, I'd never listened to his music. If it came on, it would be like, close your ears. And then fast forward to, was it 2003 or something? I had a chance, it was 2003 or 2002, 2004, I don't know, sometime around there, to visit him on his set, because Chris Tucker was working on this You Rock My World, that music video, and called me and my friend Rochelle, and, like, you know, Brett Ratner was there, and my older sister, Anique, and we went down to his set, and Michael Jackson's there, and everyone was, like, showing him all this respect and everything, and I knew who he was, but I didn't really know his music. And so I sat and just started talking to him, and he was really cool, and he's like, oh, I come from a big family too. And I'm like, oh, really? I have a lot of brothers and sisters too. It was just, and I was like, you're just talking to him. So I ended up being able to go to his ranch with a bunch of people, and then he played a bunch of stuff for us. Like, he showed us all these videos of him when he was first figuring out the moonwalk, and he was like, you know, if you want to do anything, he goes, I wasn't a good dancer. I practiced all the time, over and over and over, for days and days and days. And then I was like, wow, this guy's really great. And then I started seeing all his, you know, everything.
Wow, so you went kind of backwards. Yeah. So what happened with all the weird stuff you did?
Oh, him?
Oh, him.
Oh, him, wait. Jeez, that part of him.
Yeah, yeah, that part of him. See, you didn't even know about that, or did you?
No, I had... okay, so...
You know, because that's like...
The kid that had accused him of that at that time was actually at the ranch at that... That the second time there was those accusations, I mean, I don't know. I don't know, because I'm not him, and I don't know all the details of that. But I do know that when we were there, there was like 10, 15 kids there, and I went into his room, and his bed is like the size of like two king size beds, and he offers, he's like, you want to sleep in here tonight? Like, he asks you, and there's a big television, and, you know, people,
man,
I know that they're back.
Yeah,
the Tigers they're, are back. They're active today.
So, okay.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, he was very flirty.
Uh-huh.
It's funny. My little brother, who also didn't know anything, he's like, some of the guys were dancing because he had this game room. Michael has this game room at his ranch. Had, rest in peace. But my brother Sam's like, I'll show you how to do it. Gets on the floor and starts like trying to break dance. And Michael's like, oh my gosh, he's so funny.
Really?
Yeah, he's like telling Michael.
Is that
dance.
Your Michael Jackson voice?
That's a yeah, really he good like, talks really soft. Like,
I like the like, laugh though. That.
Yeah.
If they really were, that's awesome.
I don't know all the details of everything that gets political, but I do know he was a big inspiration, and I'll sometimes think about the stuff he said, like, do not give up. You have to, you don't practice 2 hours, you practice 10 hours, you know? It's like, you're going to do something, you got to do it well, you got to do it harder than everyone else. And he's like, you go into that place where he's like, you're not even thinking, you just do it. You just do it over and over and over and over and over and over and over. And when you're trying to start something and you feel kind of lost, which is what I felt at, you know, that age, it was a big push. I was like, and I'll think of it now, you know, when I get in a zone where I'm accomplishing a lot of stuff or trying to, and I keep hitting walls and I just want to give up. Like, I remember stuff he said, so that was cool. I'll take that. I'll try not to think of all the other stuff, you know. Take what I want and leave the rest.
Well, yes. That's what you should do. Mm. Yeah, yeah. That's cool. I had no idea you met Michael Jackson. And
yeah. It was so organic. It was such... To meet him and then learn about his music after, which was... But what was I going to say? I'm actually... This thing that I'm producing right now with Sally Kellerman. Do you know who that is? She played Hot Lips Houlihan in MASH.
In MASH. Yeah, the blonde mm-hmm. woman. Yeah.
Amazing actress. Academy Award nominated for that. She is in this thing that I'm doing. And she was talking about the other day... I mean, if you see her face, you know from her, and she has this great voice. She was in this movie called Lost Horizons with Olivia Hussey. Have you seen it? It was
no,
a musical.
I haven't.
And apparently it was bashed in the press. It was like supposed to be like the worst film ever. But when I was growing up, it was one of the movies that were quote-unquote rated. As we were allowed to watch it because it had a good message about going off and hiding in the mountains and mm-hmm. and being part of this like utopia and getting away from the... quote-unquote system.
Wow.
And she sings in it, and she starts talking about it. I'm like, I know that movie, and I started singing her all the songs from it, and she was like, how do you know this? No one has seen this film. So that's kind of cool. Like, I can relate to old actors. Like,
wait, how old is that film?
It must be... I was, like, little when I was... I'm, so maybe maybe the 70s or 80s. I wasn't around in the 70s, but it must have been made in the 70s because I saw this in the 80s. Like,
oh, wow.
Maybe it was the 80s. I don't know. But, yeah. So when I meet people in old Hollywood, I'm very familiar with their work.
Oh, that's good. Fun. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, they're the ones kind of sort of running it, or they're the legends of it.
Yeah.
You know? It's a generation behind, so it's awesome.
Yeah.
Because most people don't know, right?
No, they don't.
Most people now, that are, they don't even know what happened in the 80s and even 90s. It's kind of like, that's already going away.
So. Right, now it's like the 2000s.
Yeah.
What would it be called, the 2000s? That doesn't sound very sexy.
2010s.
The 2005s.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. But that's cool. Oh, so one, what are you?
What are you? What am I?
Yeah, well, because I know you lived in Japan, but are you part Japanese? Not, right?
You know, I'm not. Yes.
Or yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's I don't know my biological father, so it's that's yeah. I have Asians in me, Chinese and Japanese. Yes, but the
so you can't even tell people. Or there's no real defense. What do you tell people?
I'm Chinese and Japanese, and my mom's French. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But I couldn't break down exactly what my dad is because I don't know him.
Do you ever use it to your advantage and say, well, I'm Cherokee Indian, and then you get the role as the Cherokee Indian?
No, because I probably could play an Indian. My mom has very strong features, and she actually has slanted. She's blonde, like was blonde, and she has green eyes, so it's funny. But she has like. Kind of an exotic look to her, which is.
So do you feel What do you fill out in a census?
You know, they say, well, if your mother's Caucasian, then you're Caucasian. Oh, whatever really? Your mother is, you're supposed to put.
I had no idea.
But I don't really identify as like completely white. I don't, because I go places and I don't feel white when I'm walking around. Everyone's. I don't know.
Well, with the like roles, I mean, are you fulfilling Asian roles at times, and then sometimes non-Asian roles? Or are you filling the role of Mae Melanson, whatever that might be. You know what I'm saying?
Like, do you have both?
Okay.
I think a lot of
some people like always it leans one way or the other. Like they'll always get the right. Non-Asian role, but they're half Asian,
right?
And they're still playing a non-Asian completely, uh-huh. And vice versa. Or they're playing the new thing, which is playing just a regular a quarter, whatever it is. Something else.
I mean, I've gotten that too, where I've gone in and it'll be open ethnicity. It'll be like, or else it'll be like Euro Trash Girl. This movie Pathology, I got the title was Euro Trash Girl, and I'm like, I'm not a Euro Trash Girl, but I went in there and I got it. It was fun.
And you acted like a Euro Trash?
I think I was acting like a Euro Trash. That's how like Mark Neville Dean and then how they wrote it. I think I'm lucky. You know what's funny? Also, if I dye my hair, if I have my hair light, people don't know what I am, and if my hair is dark, if it's black or whatever, I think the Asian side comes out.
And you dye your hair sometimes for roles, I guess.
My hair goes all over the place. Okay. It's cut, you know, Eric. It's like I'm a working person. I have to work. You have to be.
And now I know where I met you. You were working on L Word.
I was working on the L Word. Yeah, that was a really fun show.
Yeah, the L Word's an interesting one. Was when I met you because your hair was shorter, right? Mm-hmm. It was like a bob kind of, or was
I think
it shoulder?
It was more like just shaggy.
Hit the shoulder length.
I love that
area.
You're talking about my hair right now. Like, yeah. I think I remember.
But I thought it was straight. It wasn't shaggy. Wasn't it kind of straight, just shoulder?
No, my hair was shoulder length a couple months ago.
No, I thought it was, but at that time, I took a picture.
I did this Old Navy campaign where I'm walking down the street singing, I'm wearing a new blouse.
Are we allowed to talk about L Word more?
Oh, yes. Oh, sure. We can talk about whatever you want, Eric.
Oh, okay. Really?
Until I hit you.
Okay. Well, that role, I think it made people think that you were a lesbian.
Right.
Right? Like, they couldn't separate the fact that you can just be an actress playing a role of a lesbian.
Right.
But then people actually thought in real life you're a lesbian, right?
Yeah. That,
so does everybody on there, everyone else a lesbian on that show except for you?
No. You know, I think that on that show, there's a lot of girls that were married and had kids. And
they're doing lesbian
acting,
stuff?
You know? Yes, because that show, I think what's really cool is that a lot of course, it was on Showtime and there's the whole sexual aspect to it. But I think it raised a lot of really important topics, a lot of stuff that's relevant right now about prejudice. And I think you don't have to be a lesbian to play a lesbian, Eric. but it's definitely a very fun role to play. It's funny.
Why?
Like, as soon as there's, like, you bring something, like, okay, I've played a couple roles where I've played a lesbian a couple, like, three times. In Pathology, I'm, like, a bisexual girl, and I make out with Lauren Lee Smith's character, then I'm, like, making out with Milo's character. I mean, it's just nuts. It was just one of those wild horror movies where that stuff happens. Just happens, you know.
Right.
You know, just Giant happens. Robot 2, that stuff just happens.
Right? Sure.
And then, but I think as an Asian, I'm going to say I'm Asian because I'm Asian American actress, or being any kind of ethnic actor, the roles are very minimal, or else they're very one level. And when you bring in that sexuality, for some reason, the role just gets deeper. There's more, it's more fleshed out. Not only is she a lesbian, there's all these other factors, but because they bring that sexual aspect in, all of a sudden she becomes a more interesting character. They write around that, and it makes it easier to feed to the public because they want to see some girl hooking up with another girl, and then they'll maybe pay attention to the fact that she's an online character on The L Word. Jamie Chan is a social worker working with children that are, you know, being neglected by their parents, and that's actually something that's it hit me emotionally that some kid would be abandoned because their parents don't love them because of their sexuality. And, you know, whether or not, you know, I was raised very free spirited and I don't like to define myself as something. But look, you live one life, and if something makes you happy and it's not hurting anyone, you try it. Whatever, but
okay.
No, but I actually along the note of that, I just produced and was in this PSA campaign with this comedian Todd Glass. I didn't tell you about this, and Glisten, this group GSLEN.com, which is for keeping people from just raising awareness about not using slurs like. That hurt people, like, oh, that's so gay, or calling people fag, and all that kind of thing, which can really hurt kids. It may be done in jest, but it can hurt people. But anyway, so I just did something with Todd Glass about that, and that should be coming out soon. And it's all along that same topic of just protecting people from bullying.
I see.
And that's why I took the L Word role, because I was actually up for something else, too. And I was like, here's a choice. I can choose this role that is really meaty, a little scandalous, you know. I'm going to play a lesbian, and I'm going to own it. And
you owned it.
I owned it, you know. Yeah. And it was fun working on the show. Eileen Shaken's a fun person to work for, and everyone was cool.
So if you make out with a woman, is that like a thing for acting-wise? Is that the same as making out with a guy, or is that a total different acting
action? The feeling?
No, not feeling. I'm just saying what you're showing, like to show it on camera. Is it the same thing? Is it the exact same way, or is that like a whole different acting thing? You know, it's like martial arts. There's right. like ways you fight in real life, ways right. you fight on camera. Does making out with a guy, girl, is that different from each other?
It's the sex, the stuff. Anything, when you do something on camera, when it's a sex scene, even when I've had sex scenes or make out scenes with guys or girls, it's always a little awkward.
Of course, it's on camera.
Yeah,
unless it's porn and you're regular.
I mean, even that's awkward.
I'm sure.
I'm sure it's more awkward. They're probably thinking like, "I'm hungry," or "I just ate garlic." I don't know what they're thinking. It's what, or "That guy just ate garlic. Do I want to kiss him?"
Right.
Please, you know.
But you know, is that a showier way to do that versus like?
I think so.
In real life, you know, like
just
your guy, and he's like, "God, that's a boring kiss compared to what I saw you do on TV." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
One time I was kissing someone, and I remember the director was like, "Kiss bigger," and I was thinking like, "God, this guy's like eating my face." Now my spirit can't even kissing me. But I do think it's a little different. You definitely aren't feeling anything. It's not like, "Ooh, this is so sexy. I'm really into this." It's just you're like, "Okay, I'm gonna make this look really good." But whatever else you're doing, I may be like frying an egg in a. You know,
and we're not talking about frying eggs. Well,
I'm going to go to frying eggs. No, but I mean, this is like, you want to do that really well. So if it's like, you're supposed to be seducing someone, you want to do it really well. You're not going to be sitting there and be like, "Oh, I'm going to hold back in this because people might think I'm a hoe."
Right.
You know?
No, we asked this question, or I asked this question to Tony Leung in that movie, Happy Together, right? Tony Leung's like a big actor. Happy Together.
Him. You know, I'm pretty obsessed with him.
No, but he played a gay role in that one, and he had to, like, do a sex scene that was a gay sex scene.
Right.
And I asked him, like, how do you do that when you're, you know, like, how would you go and do that? Because this is, like, very unlike you. You're such a, like...
He's a stud, hetero dude, right?
I have such a big crush on him. But then he did this gay role, and he said that he just pretended that Leslie Cheung was a woman. You know, that's what he did. That's how he handled it.
Right.
And I was like, okay, I guess that's what you would do, but, you know, I wasn't sure if that's, like, the way. But
the way to do
that's
it.
How he handled it, and that was his answer, really simple. I was like, okay.
Yeah. I haven't,
you maybe know, that's a Maybe that's the hetero manly answer, you know, but that was just, like, so simple. I was like, put that one to bed. It's over.
He's also been acting for how long? Like, I haven't been acting as long as he has.
Yeah, he's a long time.
He's done so many different roles that, you know, I'm sure for him, he, I don't know what. But for me, it's like I haven't really done that many sex roles. Roles where I've had to been connecting in that way with someone. I do a lot of, like, talking and crying. And
I saw one where you played a role and you were a dead body.
Right?
It was a TV thing. I saw it and I was like, oh yeah, you're on this. And then you were dead.
Oh, was that was Deadwood?
Was that what it was?
Was it Deadwood?
I don't remember, but you were just dead. And that was it. Like, I don't think you had an alive part. I think you were just a dead
you
body.
You just see me dead. I think originally they had a whole storyline and then it changed. And that's one of the things you learn about. You can be hired for something. I think originally it was that role was supposed to be like 6 episodes or something. But then they ended up changing the storyline and that cut me out. Big thing to experience when you're just starting out. You're like, oh my god, I've been cut, you know.
How do you handle rejection? Like, it sounds like you get a lot of jobs, so that's kind of a good thing, but there's a lot of actors or actresses out there who don't, right?
Yeah.
They get one job and it's like, awesome, I'm doing well, awesome, everything's good, and then they get rejected 25 times in a row afterwards, right?
Yeah, well, that's me.
Or more, maybe.
That's me too. Where you get rejection all the time. We'll be like, we really love her, but she's just not right.
But you've had 100 commercials. You're getting a lot of like, yeah, she's great, perfect, right? But there's a lot of people out there who get one, and then they're thinking, yeah, I'm going to roll. I'm going to get like more, and then they don't. And then they have to live with that, though. It's kind of like this thing where, you know, you're banking on your looks, your ability, and all this stuff, and then it's like getting rejected must be like, oh, something's wrong, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you're doing something
wrong. You do think that. So how do you handle that?
Like, what do you do?
If this was, I'm not really, I don't like giving advice is hard, but
I'm not saying give. I'm just wondering what you do.
Oh, what do I do?
Yeah.
You know, for me, being in an acting class really helps when it comes to the rejection factor, because if you want to be an actor, you have to make sure your craft, like Michael Jackson says over and over and over and over, you have to make sure you're really good. And if you know you're doing really quality work and you're in a class where people are honest and they're not catty and they're really about the work, they're not about showing off, and they're about really working on the character and doing the biography and all that kind of stuff, you go in and you get a part, you go in, you read for it, you give it your 100% best, and you know that you're doing good if you're in class and you're working on stuff. But if you're one of those actors that are just going out and partying or just sitting around, and then you go in and you do have a bad audition, it's only logic that you'll think that there's something wrong with you. But there's also been times where things have been not so good in my personal life, where I've had a very negative relationship, or someone's been not wanting me to commit as much to acting, and I've seen my acting suffer.
Oh, that sucks. You know? Who does that?
People.
Who are these people?
Oh, you know.
How recent?
Oh, that's not recent. I've learned to deal with that.
How can someone stop you from doing what your dream is? Yeah, that makes no sense. That means there's something wrong.
A person that's not realized themselves, maybe.
Oh,
you know.
Oh, that's who is this person?
I mean, who are we always changing? And
sure, but who's this person?
Oh, sheesh. There's been.
Oh, quantities.
Not quantities.
Others.
I think it also can be a self-destructive thing, where you'll get into a relationship that holds you back from a lot, or keeps you in a place of always trying to figure out the relationship, and then you're not, you know. But then also people can grow, and the next thing you know, they're super supportive, and I've had that too.
Really? So you've had like this negative person who's like, no, I don't, you're too busy, and you're not.
I've had that.
Right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they changed.
Go ahead.
Leave for 2 months for this role. Bye. You know, is that they don't change, do they?
Yeah.
You're like, yeah.
No, people don't. I don't think people change.
No, right?
Maybe I changed. Uh-oh. I don't know. I mean, yeah, that's, that becomes a whole another subject, relationships, yeah. I'm very private with relationships, so.
That's why I'm asking.
Right. Thanks, Eric. Now I'm giving you a hit. Yeah, I've been off and on with a person for a long time that, very supportive, though. Very supportive, but yeah, very supportive.
Is it off right now?
No.
Okay, I'm just curious. So it's on now.
Oh, la 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 la.
That's off now? Oh, all right.
I had something else I wanted to talk about.
With, oh, change the subject?
With, yeah, acting, yeah. with acting and actors. Oh, about, yeah. I just got, you know.
Witness the change of subject.
Witnessing, this is me non-sequitur. This is a non-sequitur.
Very quick change
this
of subject.
This is a non-sequitur off my personal life.
All right, fine. Let's hear this.
I think, I just finished, like, all the Asian American Film Festival stuff was going on.
Mm-hmm. Just last week.
And I met so many really nice people and people that are working really hard to do good stuff. And for a long time, I know this is going to sound, makes me feel vulnerable to say this, but because I'm half, I always felt, even though I grew up for the most, you know, the important years of my life, the ones that really, I felt when I moved to the States, Asian Americans here didn't accept me because I wasn't full Asian. And I'd go in and I'd read for parts, and I already tried to become friends with certain people, and they just didn't respond to me, or they didn't really connect, or I didn't feel that they liked me. And it's probably more in my head, you know, because I can be slightly paranoid about, oh, you want people to like you, and you're sensitive. And so you're asking about the rejection thing. I don't take it that well. Like, I'll get really down. Someone will say something and I'll hold it, and or even someone will comment about, oh, but that's just because you're pretty, that's why you got hired, and I'll go home and it'll depress me, because I'm like, wait, am I not being authentic? You know, so many things will go through my head because you want
to
be.
To this day this happens?
Yeah, it happens all
so
the time.
So how do you deal with that? You know, you don't do like Fight Club and beat yourself up, right?
Positive affirmations. Hey, I think all actors can be a little bit masochistic.
Like, so what do you do?
I don't know. I take it out on other people. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. I don't. Just go back to the work. Uh-huh. Right.
Well, that's what you should do, but, you
that's
know.
What I do.
All right.
But I do get down. It's, there'll be periods of just down. But there's also, you know, if you keep busy and you keep creating, the moment I know I get down is when I stop making things and stop writing, and that's when I'll get down.
I see. But work's important, right? I mean, that's kind of it.
Yeah.
That is one thing I've noticed about you from the beginning. It's like work is like first, you know?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I think it has to be, but in your case, for what you're doing, mm-hmm. and time is now, I think, mm-hmm. for you, it seems yeah. like, you know, more than ever, yeah. maybe.
And it's great that you have, when you have people that want to work with you, and you find like a groove of people that you're not. There's a moment, like, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, 3 years ago even, where everything was. I'd start working with people, and we just were not. Our personalities did not jive. They did not go together, and that is depressing. When you work with someone and you let them down, or they let you down, and it's a bad experience. It's like, oh my gosh, why? Because I always think that, you know, we're here to connect, and we're here to learn to get along, and that's what love is, and, you know, everything, that's everything. And if you can't do that over and over and over, it's like, okay, what, that's where I'm like, okay, what am I doing wrong? But it's gotten better now.
Okay.
Does any of that make sense?
Yeah, for sure.
Working with great people. I'm like so excited right now. It's
cool.
Just smart, awesome people.
Wait, let's go back to the Hapa thing.
Oh,
the film festival.
I got off that topic. Sorry.
But no, it's because I didn't even ask anything about it. But you went to the film festival. Uh-huh. This is something different for you, right? You usually don't go to like these Asian American events.
Yeah.
And you went to it. How did it feel, though? Did it feel good, or was it like
so
oh,
good?
Did it?
You know, I shot a movie in Hong Kong a couple years ago, and being there as an adult, being over in Asia as an adult, it felt the same as when I was a kid, where I was just comfortable. And there's something when you walk around and everyone looks like you. And also, this brings up another topic, and it's actually something that I'm making right now with my friend Timothy Tao, which is this series called Fallen Eyes, mm-hmm. Fallen Immortals, and it's about the 8 immortals, gods of China, and in our story, we bring them and we set them in Los Angeles, and it's kind of the it's the analogy of how, you know, immigrants come in and lose all their powers as
right.
as and a lot of Asian American men don't have that strength that you see over there. Like over there, the top dogs. You
yeah,
know?
Why is that?
It's
in general, like that's an issue that mm-hmm. I think is plaguing Asian Americans a lot.
Yes.
Is the lack of masculinity, at least
yes.
on screen, right?
Yes.
I mean, there's a lot of cerebral characters, a lot of like super sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe kind of soft characters,
right?
But the manly dude, the Marlboro Man of Asia,
yeah.
or Asian American,
like the Mongol, like the movie The Mongol. Or
well, that's again, that's Asian,
mm-hmm.
right? And all that stuff. But it's like, yeah,
it's
Asian
not
America
being created from over here.
Where's the bro at?
Exactly.
Where are the bros?
Uh-huh. And yeah, exactly. But you see it over there.
Yeah,
and it's in its full glory. And it's
there's
so,
a little bit. There is
so
a little.
Hot.
There's a little bit here, but I think uh-huh. the little bit that I do see. It doesn't feel right. Like,
right.
I feel like, oh, well, that's a metrosexual acting
right.
like a tough guy.
True.
You know what I mean? It's not just this guy that I look at, I go, oh, that's a tough guy.
Right.
For sure. And
uh-huh.
he is acting that role. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's kind of like Van Damme. It's like he's doing all his martial arts, but I feel like he's...
He's a chick.
Yeah, or something.
He's a metro
yeah,
guy.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's not like the dude. It's sort of like that. It's like, oh, why is it this guy that's getting this chance
yeah.
where I think he might actually just, in real life, you know, he's petting kitties all day long.
Right.
You know, he's like, oh, my cats.
Yeah.
right? But it's
wait,
like,
don't you have cats?
Yeah, I have two.
Oh,
okay. Yeah.
He just called himself out.
Yeah.
But you're a manly man, Eric.
Oh, I am?
You are,
thanks.
Totally. You're not
thanks.
Like... You're not
yeah,
a watered down.
I'm a bro.
You are who you are.
I'm kidding.
Yeah, you're like, you know, you're like, you hang.
Really? All right.
That way.
But I guess thank you. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah,
I wasn't
thanks.
Fishing for
you weren't fishing for
yeah,
a compliment.
I wasn't fishing for any kind of compliment there, but no, it just seems like that's something that
mm-hmm.
I don't see.
It's something that's really important to
yeah.
me, and I think it's very, I think once that can be sorted out in the Asian American community, and I was talking about this with my
cousin does that, like mm-hmm. the roles that he's kind of working on
uh-huh.
as an, you know, he's an Asian American guy
right.
In acting and stuff, and he wants that role or wants to play that role or is looking to even create that role
mm-hmm.
for other people as a filmmaker to get people to, like, you know, be more manly.
To support and see
yeah.
that there is that side.
That, yeah, yeah. And I guess he said that side that is his commentary, his name is Michael Aki,
uh-huh.
his commentary was that people actually want it, but they actually don't want it. Like, they'd
right.
rather have the metrosexual guy
well, it's
or
less,
something.
It's less...
But, they, you know, once that role gets made, it's kind of like people reject it and not
mm-hmm.
really... They don't really support that, actually,
mm-hmm.
in the end.
Mm-hmm.
That's what his experience was.
That
is.
I support that. I totally agree with that.
Yeah. But he's going to keep pushing it anyways. Like, fuck it. I'm going to keep
doing I think
it,
if though. Any, if you push anything enough, eventually it becomes something that is accepted. It all has,
but it shouldn't have to be pushed.
But every, but
it
doesn't.
Be
but there was
it
a point
natural,
when, you know, African American men weren't considered to be. I mean, this is a long time ago, but it's over time. It's slowly seeped into, you know, culture and has been more accepted. We have a
right.
black president now, and that wasn't something that would have been possible at some point. Our time in that way is coming, but I also think that it's something that has to be supported by the Asian American
yeah,
community right. first. It has to show that it. This type of portrayal of an Asian American man and also woman who is not just a nerd, who's not just a bad woman, who can also play, you know, a leading role that's not just specific to culture or ethnicity. I mean, Maggie Cuse, I think she's done a really good job. That's been a good example of she's just playing a woman, you know, and that's a start, you know, but for back to the Asian American men thing, I think that if it has to be supported on a grassroots level and created in a way that's not campy, the portrayals, good writing, and make them into sex symbols that aren't, like you said, metro sex symbols, that are just like the dude that, like, you know, doesn't, his hair's not all perfect, maybe, you know, just he has a couple wrinkles, that's hot, you know, like old boy, that's hot, you know, I think it is, you know, there's, but it has to be supported first by Asian Americans, and then it has to be also, okay, now I'm like, I feel like I'm talking in circles, but it has to be commercially viable. And that is something that, you know, studios and stuff, I don't think it's that they're prejudiced in any way. It's just that hasn't been shown to them. Like, this guy is, you know, commercially viable. Let's put him in. I saw him in this indie. It was good writing. He played this strong character.
Right.
People responded to it. Let's hire him. You know, that needs to be done more.
Yeah.
And it's not being done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure it is being done, but it needs to be done more. And what I saw when I went to the film festival was that more and more people are supporting, and it's not like separated into just like, oh, the Koreans, the Chinese, the,
sure.
It's, you know, banding together. And I love that.
That is kind of cool. Then one, I guess if there's a problem with it, then the problem is sometimes it becomes an in thing. Like, mm-hmm. This is us. And if you're not in us, right. Or this group, you're kind of the outsider, which
right.
I guess
which
you
I
kind
still
of are.
Am.
You
yeah.
are, right? You literally are. I'm like, ah, you're like a huge, to me, a huge actress compared to like a lot of the ones
yeah.
that are being so supported by the festivals. They don't even know who you are.
Right,
or if
they
or if they do, you're like the outsider.
Well, they don't really.
Yeah.
It's like I've had to introduce myself, and
yeah.
everyone's been so supportive.
But they should, yeah, but you know what I'm saying? They should know you and support
yeah.
you. They should reach out to you, I
yeah.
think, and look for you. The other, you know, instead of the other way around, but that's
but that might also
works.
Be down to my fault because yes. I can be a little reclusive and
yeah, that's true.
You know,
except you're here.
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, but yours, you always,
I asked,
you're,
no.
you make me comfortable. But there's also the side of the mainstream Hollywood. It's
sure.
funny, like I'll go out and do something and that, and I feel very supported, and casting directors, I'm beginning to be known, and I'm lucky like that where they'll be really supportive, and producers, you know, I'm more known in that way than I am with the Asian American film community.
Just so far.
So far.
Just starting, right?
But there's so much talent out there.
Sure.
And I saw some cool stuff. And yeah, it was, it's a good, I feel good about it.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's
awesome. That a period there?
Yeah. Paragraph.
Paragraph,
period.
Paragraph
end. Yeah,
paragraph
yeah.
end and
yeah.
enter.
Yeah. Cool.
Space. Space, cab.
So then what else are you doing then, like in the next couple of weeks type of thing? Do you have, is it like back to auditions, or is it like more?
No, there's a movie that...
That's right, you were mentioning
the movie. I can't talk about it because the deal's being done right now.
Is it a big one?
It's
like a Hollywood blockbuster.
What exactly
type of thing?
Does... Speaking of Tim Tao, he just texted me.
Okay.
This is his text. You have to rewrite script. We have 12 hours.
No.
Okay.
No, but you know, are you kind of like going out for movies or up for movies that are like the $100 million
right.
kind of variety? Or
I am.
You know,
there's a couple things going on. I do go out for those, and I have a really good time with those because I feel like those are always the easiest for me. Like the big films, I'm like, I'm gonna nail this. Those are the easiest because I feel like because I've done more film, and even. Though I've done films that nothing has happened yet with them, where they're still being, they're in post-production, or they're still being, you know, sold or whatever, they've been leading roles, and I've loved the roles that I've played because they've been cool characters. So maybe no one's seen them yet,
mm-hmm.
but they're roles that have really helped me as an actor. So when I go in for big budget stuff, I always feel very confident because I'm familiar with that, you know, scope. You know.
Cool.
Yeah.
You will get those roles?
Will I? Yes, I will.
Okay.
Don't worry.
Don't
it's only
worry.
A matter of time.
Okay.
Yeah. But the one I'm, they're doing the deal, so I can't really talk about it. But yeah, I'll talk about it another time.
Okay.
It's because what if I don't end up doing it?
I know. So that's kind of
that
what
would
happens.
Be weird. If this happens, I'm like, I'm doing this, and then we're doing this, and then it's like, oh, they changed it. That's
yeah.
the nature of life.
That happens
life.
Fast.
And everything.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Good, man. I think we're pretty good for this moment.
We covered lots of different topics.
Yeah. And it's just the start. I'm just kidding. No, I'm kidding.
But, yeah.
Cool. No, thanks for coming.
No problem.
Yeah.
Giant robot.
Oh. Okay. So thanks a lot for listening.
Thanks for listening,
I'll say
guys.
Sayonara.
Sayonara.
All right. Goodbye.
Bye. Au revoir.